Okay, hi, I'm Christoph Helvig. I'm a Linux kernel hacker. I'm self-employed, actually, doing lots of work for SGI and XFS. That's a file system, a non-disk file system for Linux. I've contributed, actually, to most of the areas of the kernel. These days, I'm really doing lots and lots of review from drivers I get from new developers and drivers I get from companies who want their hardware supported by Linux. And I'm also really reading over lots of old code and see ways to improve it, to refactor it, to remove dead code and whatever. But I think I'm quite qualified to talk about how we try to improve performance in open source projects. So the interesting thing is if you have the software project, you want to know who's behind the code. And if you have closed software, you have a team behind it. You usually don't know it, but you know how it's structured is. Stefan already told us. You have those project managers that lack the technical skills, and you have lots of programmers. And interestingly, you hear this myth of the highly trained professional, but if you look at a software team, you usually have a few highly skilled people, if you're lucky, and you have lots of people who just started to learn to programming, who came from a 2 months crash course from the job agency, and unfortunately they often don't really have a way to learn to become a better programmer, because that's not the way software development companies works. They get an introduction to the source code management system, they get a basic introduction to what they do, but once they write code, there are seldomly people that actually explain them in detail why the code is not okay, it may work, but it could be better, it could be more maintainable. This does often not happen in commercial development. So a very important point in most of the open source processes is to have a way for developers that have just started in this project or whatever, to become better. So how do you help them to become better? One important thing is that there's lots of open source code. There's lots of bad code, but there's also really nice code, and you can just tell people, okay, read some code, because reading good code is the best way to start learning writing good code yourself. Read it and read it and read it again. And as I already mentioned, it allows very good mentoring. So if you have this developer who wrote a new driver for some sound card or networking card, I can just read through it and tell him, okay, that's not good, you could do this better, there's a library function you could use, and etc, etc. I tell him what he can improve, and usually he will go back for a week or two and come with an improved version of the driver, and sometimes we'll have to reiterate that 2 or 3 times, but at the end we have a good driver usually. So, beside the actual programmer, we also have the project management. And in open source world, we don't have this traditional project management. We don't have deadlines, usually. We don't have those customers who shout, we need this feature. We can just people tell them, hey, if you want this feature, implement it yourself or find someone who can implement it. It's not my business to implement all the features you need. So this lack of pressure actually allows us to write good solutions instead of just quick solutions, which on the other hand is very soon very different as soon as you get to the commercial spin-offs of open source projects. So if you're a Red Hat customer, you also want the quick fix. So Red Hat will do the quick fix for you, but it has no chance, for example, to go into the upstream kernel tree. It will just stay in Red Hat's tree until we have a proper solution. And yeah, good code needs to be lived. That means if you're working on a project, you really need to know your project by heart. You need to get a 20-line snippet, and you need to say, okay, this is the timer code, or this is that area of code. You really, really need to know what all this is about, because then you have a feeling for the code. You know, okay, damn, he writes this code, and it just can't really work. I don't know why, but I need to research that. And that's the feeling you always have to have. And one of the important codes to actually make it possible to know the code that well is to not start with huge frameworks building for the future, because we might need this interface maybe in 10 years and don't want to change it. That's the best way to get absolutely unmaintainable, ununderstandable, and whatever code. And for the commercial software world, there's a very strong tendency to build this kind of code. There's really a fear to not look into the future yet. But in the end, less code means less bugs. If you don't have the code at all, there's no chance there's a bug in it. And what's also very interesting is the use of existing infrastructure. I've seen so many drivers who just re-implemented the linked list again the 100th time. And as soon as you start to get to this very common thing, twice the code does not only mean twice the bug, but 10 times the bug or whatever, because you have this one piece of code that's very well reviewed, and no one is going to bother to review the 100th linked list implementation. And going back to the argument of the small lean interfaces means you have to change your interface over the time and kill that code, consolidate, duplicated code. If you see two drivers or 10 drivers out of 20 use exactly the same code, you put it into the library and you reignite code for the interface better. But in the closed software development, you often have a real fear for doing this kind of refactoring. It's this kind of, if it ain't work, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just don't touch the thing, because it kind of works. Why would we change it? And there's also this interesting idea of unproductively spent programmer time. Oh, damn, he didn't write any new lines of code. He didn't implement any feature. What did he do? He wasted our time. We don't pay him that much money just to play around with the project. And to allow the software to grow better, it's very, very important to have a strong review process. If you look again at close companies, I've worked at a few before I got into this open source stuff big time, you often actually do have some formal review process, but that just means one developer is looking over it and, oh, okay, it looks okay to me. But the real important thing is that the reviewer actually needs to be the better programmer than the one who wrote the code originally, because he needs to understand it at least as good as the person who wrote it, and he needs to help to improve it. So you can't just let someone review something he doesn't know about. On the other hand, we have this myth of the 1,000 eyes find every bug in open source software just because it's open. It's as likely as the 1,000 monkeys that reproduce Shakespeare when they have typewriters, because all those people don't know the code. And even if they could start to read it, get into it, there are so many open source projects that no one looks at, or just a few people. So this is really strange. You really need to have lots of trained people to look at this code and help the programmer to improve. Just for an example, a week ago, someone did some source code analysis. I will explain that a little later on lots of parts of the Linux kernel, and in some sound drivers that have been there for 10 years without many changes, he found a bunch of trivial security holes that could gain anyone root access who's in the box and use that sound driver. And that code has been there in the Linux kernel for 10 years, which explains no one really looked at it deeply. So this is the kind of static code analysis playing, because there's lots of really trivial bugs you could see, but you have to look very deeply at it. So people started to write programs that actually pass the source code and find these kind of bugs by giving them rules. The old C programmer on the audience might remember still lint, which they run. Nowadays that's built into the compiler, which gives all this simpler syntax errors and you forget a cast and whatever. But these days we actually have lots of interesting tools from research. For example, the Stanford University came up with a checker tool that found lots of non-trivial bugs into the Linux kernel. And for a long time we actually had about weekly postings from these guys who improved their checker again and again and again and posted long lists of bugs, and people went on to fixing it. At least as we also have very specialized tools. For example, Linus Torvalds, the Linux founder, wrote a new tool that can parse C code and find bugs that are extremely specific to the Linux kernel and very useless to about every other thing. But this tool, for example, found that really bad bug I mentioned when I had the last slide on the projector. But you might look as much at the code as you can find bugs. You really won't find all those bugs that happen in practice, because it's just too deeply intertwined. You can't find it. You actually have to test your code a lot. You basically have two kinds of testing. One thing is the regression testing. This means whenever you found a bug and fixed it, you try to get a test case which reproduces this old bug, and then you test each new release against it, whether it happens. This is quite a lot of effort, because you might have this bug, but getting the bug reproducible is difficult, and getting into a minimal test case is also not easy usually. So lots of open source projects don't do this. A very good counterexample I'm going to explain a little later on is GCC, the GNU compiler collection, which has a very good regression testing. And you have the stress testing where you throw high loads, often random loads, just whatever, and throw it at the program and test and test and test, and when it dies, it's wrong. This is actually very easy to set up, but you need lots of hardware resources to do this efficiently. So let's go to some project examples. The Linux kernel is what I'm inherently familiar with, so I can talk a lot about it. Started by Linus Torvalds in 1991, and like most of the successful projects these days, it started as a really tiny toy. It was not something anyone would take serious, but people liked it and improved it, and today it's industry standard. And we have a very fast growing rate. The Linux kernels are getting bigger and bigger again. Not in binary size, it's also growing, which people call bloat, but we have drivers for all hardware you could imagine, and nowadays we have more ports to different computer architectures than anyone else. We even got a better support than NetBSD, who had that for a long time. And one of the really interesting things about Linux kernel, and in which it is very different from most open source projects we know, is that it's a completely distributed development model. There's really no such thing as a central DBS repository, which also means project management is quite undemocratic, because in the end, only Linus Torvalds merges code into the official tree. Only one person decides what's an official Linux release. And he always tells if someone is unhappy with his decisions, he's always free to fork the code. And very lots of people have their kind of branches, but they have their own features that Linux doesn't want. Like, every Linux distributor has this. Lots of people in the kernel community. But in the end, those aren't forks in the traditional sense, where you take the code at one time and develop into a completely different direction. It's more like parallel branches that are resynchronizing all the time. And what's also very important, if you, for example, saw the free standards track on Thursday, is that those tend to absolutely avoid changing interfaces. They're compatible. You can take a tree from someone and still use it. Interesting thing in the quality management thing is there's absolutely no central QA. You have the public reviews on the lists, but there's no central stress testing and no central regression testing. If you have a change Linux and it looks good, Linux trusts you, that is good. So that doesn't mean we don't have any QA. For example, IBM is these days doing nightly regression testing with a really big test suite called the Linux Test Process. All the vendors like IBM or SUSE or Debian are doing regular testing before they actually ship a release, and lots of hardware and lots of different tests. Yeah, and as I already mentioned, these kind of checkers we have that also run very regularly. Another very different example is the GNU Compiler Collection, or as it was known earlier, GNU C Compiler, GCC, which is, in my opinion, the most important free software project in the last decade, because it allowed all those free programs to actually be compiled from the source code to the binary version. It supports directly important languages like C, C++, Java, Fortran, ADA for the military, and whatever, guys, and has lots of backends for basically any operating system or CPU architecture you could imagine. And it's a very old project, started by Richard Stallman himself in 1987. It was developed very closely, actually. Also, it was free software, as the FSF prefers over the open source name. Only in 1997, so 10 years after it was started, there was a fork, actually, of this project in EGCS, enhanced GNU compiler system, by lots of people that were just unhappy with this development model. They didn't get the patches in, their new hardware support. So they set up a public repository where everyone could commit and lots of people could check this code in. And in 1999, only after 2 years of this, even the FSF realized that this was a much better development model. And at that time, this fork became the official GCC. So what I'm explaining now is how today's GCC works. And as a project organization of a steering committee, which is, it's not really like project management, but it's those folks who actually make the policy decisions if the developers can't find a consensus. And then we have lots of people who have write access to the repository, from people who have a blanket write access. They can write to any area, to people who maintain CPU or operating system ports. And it's really a lot of people who actually can write directly, very different from Linux. And the whole development model is much, much more strict. So they have a very strong phase model where you have a first phase where you do free development for everything, and a B and C phase where you stabilize more and prepare for release, which is very similar to lots of commercial software development actually. They have an extremely strict review policy, so no patch goes in without a review from a maintainer who's qualified for that area. Changes to the code must be tested on multiple platforms for core support, which is unlike Linux, where x86 and these days PowerPCs are the most important architectures, and if anything else breaks, it's up to the maintainer to fix it up. And patches, not phases, are to come up with some test cases. So if you're changing something, fixing a bug, you must provide a test suite, test case, so we can regression test against those things. So to a more specific example, let's go to a drive from the Linux kernel. Broadcom is a company who does networking hardware and stuff like that. And this, for example, is a controller many of those probably have in your notebooks if you bought one last year. And Broadcom wrote a driver for it. That's the one on the downside. It's 6,600 lines of code. And when someone from the Linux community said, this driver is just unacceptable. It's so much code duplication, whatever. And wrote in about a third of the size for the same functionality, and it's actually faster. Which shows if you're in this corporate environment, you have lots of manager-imposed things. You have to reuse certain parts of code for different operating systems. Also, they don't fit into each other. They say they couldn't trust the operating system vendor. So this starts to get bigger and bigger, and you get lots of abstraction layers. And you have much more code and much more bugs. For example, today, I looked over this driver and found about 5 trivial bugs in 10 minutes. It's really huge and unmaintainable. No one can understand it. And my conclusion is that an open development model allows for higher quality software, but it doesn't guarantee it. Just look at all those small, crappy projects lying on SourceForge where no one cares. It's not really better than some average closed source software because they don't have review. The people are just learning to program and whatever. But for the good quality of that, you need a good developer that writes the code, not a good manager, but someone who actually understands and lives the code. And by doing open development, open source development, you allow a programmer to grow better, to grow into his role, to start to become a good programmer by help of all the people in the community.